Well, give me just a moment. I'm going to go tuck Dylan in upstairs, and then I'll get us started here. So,
just tell Liz to tell him, be like, go to bed, damn it. But in Spanish.
I'm going
to
grab something to drink.
Okay, I'll just be here.
Yep, you're by yourself. Should have had Kyle.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's just you and me, because we're still recording. It's just like high school all over again. I have no idea if I'm actually going to keep this, because, you know, I'm the editor. I can do whatever the fuck I want.
At the 11-yard line, and it's Green again out of the Wildcat, and he will throw this time. Touchdown, Jake Paulson. Well, he's got the fifth-year senior at quarterback, Blau, and he is held up. Ball is stripped loose, taken away by Blake Cashman, and he will return it the other way. Minnesota, scoop and score off the strip. P.J. Fleck and the Minnesota Golden Gophers. An impressive performance on both sides of the football as they stun the Purdue Boilermakers. 41-10 is the final.
Bobby Petrino out of a job at this hour. Louisville has fired the head football coach for Yahoo Sports.
I'm telling you, this is going to be a skeleton staff led by interim coach Lorenzo Ward. While the Louisville administration, I mean, they've got someone. Everyone knows Louisville fans, they want Jeff Brohm. They want the native son, the former Louisville quarterback. You know, through and through Louisville football has been the Brohm family. And now it will be on Louisville athletic director Vince Tyra to go and get it.
Welcome to the Hammer and Ails podcast, the Purdue football podcast for SB Nation's Hammer and Ail. Hammer and Rails, not Hammer and Ails. Jeez, I'm changing the name of the blog now. Anyway, we are here, and it's been a very eventful weekend for Purdue football. Didn't do a whole lot in Minnesota yesterday. Easily the worst game of the Jeff Brohm era. And then the news that Bobby Petrino is out at Louisville now has us sweating to the end of the season of will he or won't he? Will Jeff Brohm stay or will he go home to Louisville? With us tonight, we have a couple of guests. We have, as usual, out on the West Coast trying to dodge fire. Juan, how's things going? Smoky, I assume?
Very smoky. It definitely looks like the marijuana laws that California passed a few years ago have taken effect. It's either that or the wildfires.
One or two. It just depends on are you getting a good contact high or not.
Definitely not. It's the worst contact high I've ever had.
And also with us from here in Indy, the rarely checking in Andrew Holmes, the guy that basically makes a prediction for us every week and then doesn't do anything else on the site, but we like him anyway. So, Andrew, how are you today?
I'm good. I believe my official title is Morale Booster, right?
Yes, he provides support. He boosts us all up in our GroupMe chat and everything else.
Does he do a good job of it, though?
Yeah. Well, oh, well, I will not.
He boosts morale in more ways than one. Being the person that takes all the crap also boosts everybody's morale, right?
Yeah, but we also have Kyle for that.
Yeah, but I look more adult, so.
You're just the version of Kyle that doesn't do anything.
No, I'm a version of Kyle that does things in the real world more than Kyle does.
Well, there we go.
I mean, Kyle doesn't listen. No one on our staff listens to these podcasts anyway, so we can bash on Kyle all we want. Ledman's the only one who listens, so.
Yeah. I actually have not even listened to the ones that I was on before, so.
Oh, wow. So, yesterday's game at Minnesota, just a terrible, terrible day all around. I got to admit that I was a little bit worried when they took the opening possession, it worked 8 minutes off the clock, and got a field goal out of it. And I think Rob Blackman and Pete Quinn on the radio broadcast, because I was coming home from running some errands as the game started, they said it best is sometimes when you have a lengthy drive like that, and even though you're not that far behind, you start pushing, you feel like you've got to get everything in a big chunk when you still have a lot of time left. And I really think that drive kind of threw us off offensively, and we never got in any kind of a rhythm whatsoever.
Oh yeah, definitely. It really did feel like we were catching up the whole game. I mean, even in those first couple drives, it was like Blau was just trying to chuck it down the field and get something. And I mean, there were some plays that also didn't help where the receivers may have dropped the ball and stuff like that, but it just seemed like they were just playing desperate football.
Yeah, and it didn't make any sense. I mean, I felt like we abandoned the run too early, especially against a team that gave up 400 some odd yards on the ground to Illinois. It was a really, really odd game. It just, we kind of let them dictate the pace when we never should have and never had reason for them to dictate the pace.
Yeah, we had left the run, and then we had our usually accurate quarterback being extremely inaccurate the entire game. And I think our defense has played over their heads for the majority of the year. And then I think they finally showed up to their talent level and their depth on Saturday more than they had all year.
Right. And it's just, it was just really strange. And I do have to give credit to Minnesota. Obviously, they played much, much better than they did against Illinois. And they're not a terrible team. It's not like we got beat by an Illinois or a Rutgers or anything. But I think it was just shocking that the margin was there and everything went sideways with that, with the fumble six after that, too.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like that's all I can say.
Yeah.
There was just bad play calling to begin with. And then any decent play calling just felt like a bad execution. There were times where it seemed like Blau was about to do something, second-guessed himself, hesitated, and then got hit, like, trying to recover the play.
Right.
At the same time. And then players were running routes and, you know, setting and planting themselves 2 yards from the first down marker a few times. It's like, you got to know where you're at. It's just overall bad, bad football.
I kind of wonder if we practiced in the cold weather very much the last week, because they definitely acted like a team that had not been in the cold for 12 months.
Well, according to a coach from Michigan, we don't know how to simulate the cold and produce facilities. So we need a giant walk-in freezer at West Lafayette, apparently, to practice. Well, that's
basically what Minnesota is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a wasteland. But yeah, did we lose Travis? I think we did.
Yeah.
Is he dead?
Maybe somebody stole the copper out of the wires.
That is entirely possible. Well, much like Purdue football, Travis has disappeared.
I'm confident in a comeback, though. I was just like Saturday, I was confident in a comeback all the way until about the fourth quarter. Midway through the fourth quarter.
When we gave up that scoop and score, I was just like, well, that's the dagger right there. Because it was just like any sense of momentum was just lost.
Mm. Well, I felt like if we'd been able to put a drive together after that, could have come back. I feel like this team doesn't get down very much, and that they always believe they can come back. And I think Blau especially always believes that he can come back. When he starts to drop, I think is when everybody so drop. They're kind of like, sometimes they can be like the Saints over the last, well, not last year, but 2 or 3 years before that, where I felt like they always could come back because the offense was so good, but you really had to kill them before they would quit.
Right. I mean, we've seen two sort of comebacks already with Northwestern and Missouri. They just couldn't complete them. I mean, Northwestern, they were already down 14-0. What, they were down 21-10 against Missouri at one point as well. And, like, we're sputtering in the third quarter before making that fourth quarter push. So, I mean, they could do it. Maybe it was just also the weather, too. Just nothing was working at all.
I think that fumble was a big killer, because I think 10 points before that, 10 points is nothing for this offense.
Oh, yeah.
Especially against Minnesota's defense. But just like before the Vikings, not the Vikings, but with some of the other NFC and AFC North teams, though, when you go in and you play them outdoors in the cold, all bets are off.
I think part of it, too, is that we might have just overlooked Minnesota as well. Thinking, all right, coming off another ranked win at home, going on the road against a team that is reeling. In this case, they just fired one of their coaches. They could have easily just overlooked them as well, because I felt like we overlooked Michigan State going into that game as well, thinking their pass defense is trash, but completely forgetting about their run defense as well. And then overlooking Lombardi, who was probably actually better than Lewerke at this point for Michigan State.
Yeah, you almost felt like team was checking their phones on the sideline to see if who was winning in the Northwestern Iowa game.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that they did fire the defensive coordinator, I think you always get that next game, that full-on heart from whatever unit loses a coach or from a team that loses a coach. I think you see at least one game or at least one half of everything they've got to show that it wasn't their fault.
Drew pointed out in last week's podcast as well that, like, Minnesota is the kind of team that you need to put away early. Like, in all their losses, they've pretty much just gotten blown out from the start.
I think that's a reflection, honestly, a little bit of the PJ Fleck type thing, because I think you can pump a team up, and then when adversity hits, where do you go?
Right. Hey, I'm back.
At least someone associated with Purdue made a comeback this weekend.
Hey!
Now, the basketball team, not quite a comeback, but
survived. Yeah, I had to reset my modem and my router, so that was wonderful.
Oh, gosh, yeah. But, yeah, basketball had a good win, and speaking of which, hopefully we can get the basketball podcast started up soon.
That's all in Casey's corner. Let him
eventually.
Do it.
I'm trying to push him, but we'll get there.
So anyway, I think we can just agree that the Minnesota game sucked.
Yes.
I mean, that's all you can do is put it behind you. And one of the things that I think stands out, though, and part of the reason I have some confidence going forward, is that this was an anomaly under Brohm. You know, this was his 23rd game as our coach. It's the first time that we just really got our ass kicked the whole time.
It was the first time it seemed like we gave up since probably the Michigan game last year.
And really, I don't think we gave up in that Michigan game. I think we just ran out of gas because we were still leading in the third quarter, pretty deep into the third quarter of that one.
It's true, but that was mostly just, you know, defense holding its own until the dam broke. Like, the offense did not get a first down in that second half, but that's a whole nother story.
Right, but this was just, I mean, it's an anomaly. Whereas Hazel, I mean, his first season, that's all we did was get our ass kicked.
I felt like Rutgers last year, more than give up, it was just like every single thing just happened to go wrong at the
right
time.
Basically, the Rutgers game was we would gain 50 yards, and then a drive would stall, and we wouldn't score. And then Rutgers would punt it back, and we'd go 50 yards. Drive would stall, we wouldn't score. Rutgers would punt it back, and that's just all we did. That's how we ended up with 500 and some odd yards and only 12 points. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, and then they had a couple of those back-breaking big runs, which...
Yeah, they basically made two plays on offense and said, all right, well, we're just going to sit on this now. Yeah. But anyway, so the bigger news, though, is we can probably just move forward, and Jeff Brohm is going to turn things around and hopefully stay for a while, is the bigger news that broke today, obviously. Bobby Petrino out at Louisville. The Louisville athletic director has already publicly named Jeff Brohm as his top target. So there is definitely some concern there. Will he go or will he not go? And the sooner that Brohm officially turns them down, the better. It would be nice if he began his press conference tomorrow with the "I'm not going to Louisville, I'm staying," and just give a definitive answer. But
no, that's not going to happen.
It would just be nice if he would do that. I mean, he knows that he's going to get an offer. He knows whether he wants to stay or not. And it would be nice if he knew if he's staying or not, just be like, okay, I want to address this now. It's obviously going to be an elephant in the room. I'm not going anywhere. Done. That's the easiest way to settle it.
You know damn well he's not going to say anything like that until afterwards. At most, he's just going to tell Louisville and us that, you know, he's not even going to consider it until the season's over. Same thing he did when he was at Western Kentucky and Purdue was trying to hire him.
Yeah, very much a guy to just not say anything either way and do it to be respectful to both sides, because I think that's one thing that I like about Brohm over, you know, say any other guy that we could land, is just his character and the way that he handles things and handles himself is basically exactly how you would want him to do it, except this time when you want him to come out and just say F Louisville and I'm not going anywhere.
Well, we had a couple questions on our Instagram, and Juan knows how the youth out there actually use the Instagrams.
Yeah, so we have two questions. One of them's relating to Brohm. So this first one's coming from Byron Slawback. I'm sorry if I mispronounce anyone's names here. That's just how you say it in Spanish. He says, going to be negative here. Assuming Brohm leaves, who replaces him?
Well, that's a really good question. There's a number of targets out there, but I haven't done any research as to who we would actually go after. And I would wonder if we would promote from within with either Holt or Brian Brohm. Now, is Brian Brohm ready to take over a major conference program? I don't know. But it also depends on who Jeff would get to come with him at Louisville, because remember, he brought most of the staff over from Western Kentucky with him. So it's a case of who's left at that point. And I think that that's another reason that we had some success, because he brought most of his staff with him and there was that continuity. Whereas when we had the transition from Hazel, he didn't bring much of his staff from Kent State. It was kind of a hodgepodge collection of assistants from all over, and obviously it didn't work out. So it's really hard to say who we would get. You know, just trying to go off the top of my head, whoever the guy is at Utah State would be a good choice. He's got them 8-1. You know, I'm trying to think of I don't know if I'd want to go with the MAC coach du jour because that didn't work out very well for us. Someone mentioned Lane Kiffin, and I think that would be an absolute disaster.
I mean, the Lane train, Boilermaker special. I mean, I don't want Lane Kiffin would just be bad, but it would make a great meme show for preseason.
See, with Lane Kiffin, I'm just like, what has he ever done? He has failed at every step that he's done, and he continues to fail upward. I don't understand it.
Well, he didn't fail. He didn't fail at Tennessee. He just left before he could fail.
I mean, I don't get what is so attractive about him other than, okay, his dad was the really good defensive coordinator for Tampa. Is that really worth it? I mean, the guy is, okay, he's 51-29 in college. I mean, he couldn't do anything at USC, couldn't do anything at Tennessee. He was expected to have a great season this year at Florida Atlantic, and they're 5-5. Really?
It's definitely not going to be Lane Kiffin. I think I would have to revoke my JPC membership if Lane Kiffin was hired.
Well, I know that there was one that, when we were looking at Brom, there was a reader that was adamant that we should go after Art Briles. And
no.
I finally was just like, no, this is not happening. This would be a terrible idea. And this is the same reader that actually sent me a death threat as a result.
On that note,
a little bit unhinged.
Speaking of guys with a maybe potential baggage, do you look at assistant coaches in the Big Ten like Ryan Day, the interim coach while Urban Meyer was suspended?
I think that'd be a good look, but I know Day is going to get a look whenever Meyer leaves, which could be by the end of the season. And I wouldn't want to go after Meyer because he doesn't know how to win in West Lafayette. So
I think another point came up earlier too is, when it comes to staff, and I think this is a little bit off of the question, but Brom does seem like the guy that's going to want to take all of his staff with him. And then you get into, again, can Louisville afford to do that?
It seems like they know that they can at least somewhat afford to take Brom, or at least they know it's a gamble. It's a gamble that they can take. Now, if Brom goes to Louisville and does not do well, and they have to fire him or whatever, that could really hurt them. But if Louisville's financials were horrid, they wouldn't have already said that they were going to go after Brom.
I mean, because they got to pay Purdue close to $6 million if he leaves. Or at least, I think that is like Brom would owe $6 million, but I know usually the school that's hiring him pays that off for him and whatnot. Because I think I believe the terms that he's under right now is we paid off Western Kentucky for him to leave, and then he just basically gets an interest-free loan that every year he's at Purdue, he gets like $150,000 taken off of that until it's done. So it's a complicated issue because he would still have to pay us what he owes for what we paid Western Kentucky, and then part of what he would, what they would have to pay for him to leave too early. And I think it comes out to about $6 million just to get him on top of the what they're paying Petrino too.
Right. And Louisville knows that. So I'm getting the sense that they've probably talked to their boosters and said, if we hire Brom, will you give us more money?
True.
So
it's going to be interesting. And,
it's a big risk for them, that's for sure. Because if it doesn't work out, like, they could possibly be in financial ruin, which, you know, I would be okay with.
Wasn't it about a year and a half ago before the sports stuff, or maybe it was 2 years ago, that the governor or somebody was actually trying to close down Louisville?
I can't remember.
It's something like that. I know Louisville has also had issues on the academic side because they almost weren't accredited as a university.
Worst Power 5 school by far. I mean, they make Nebraska look like Harvard when it comes to the rankings because it's about that big of a difference.
Right. So I know that was a big issue for them. But the point is I think that the only thing that was like kind of keeping us from worrying about Louisville taking Brom was the fact that Brom has only been here for 2 years. They may want to stay another year or two, and that Louisville doesn't have the money. But it's clear that they're willing to spend money they don't have to get Brom. So
and keep it costs like $4 to go across the bridge on 65 now since they rebuilt it. So that's probably where they're getting the money.
I say we tear down that bridge and build a wall.
Build the wall.
Kentucky sends their worst.
I mean, Kentucky, Southern Indiana, so
Kentucky is basically Indiana's Mexico. So you know,
I've got plenty of Kentucky jokes.
They're like our version of Mexico, but just with your food.
I will not hear you badmouth the name of the colonel.
No, KFC's okay.
I used to work at a KFC. It's the only job that I've ever gotten paid to.
Oh, God.
Well, it's a good thing that Juan's in charge of the editing and not Casey this time.
Yeah. We can cut kidding.
That. So what was our second Instagram question on that note?
So the second one was actually dealing probably more with recruiting. And it's saying, what's the big... So it's from... Josh Wintrow, again, sorry if I mispronounced last names there. What's the biggest unfilled need for 2019?
I'm looking at the class right now, and it's actually pretty full. I mean, we've gotten, looks like, four offensive linemen, which is always critical, and you can never have too many linemen, and I'm glad that he's addressed that. Defensive line is stacked. I would say that defensive line has two players that could probably start for us right now with Karlaftis and Fischel. And I just love to say Fischel. Got a couple of linebackers here, four-star safety, and you got four defensive backs. I mean, we even have a non-scholarship long snapper and a kicker from Alabama. So it's pretty set. Two tight ends, two running backs. I mean, I would kind of like to see maybe another running back just because we're losing both Knox and Markell this year. And we would basically be left with Fuller. And then we have Horvath. And I'm forgetting the guy that came in this recruiting class. I'd have to look back. But we have two running backs committed for next year. Who is the running back that we got this year?
Did Worship graduate?
Worship. I keep forgetting about Worship. No, Worship would be still here. He is just, he's missing the year. He'll be back as a senior next year. And I think potentially he could get a sixth year because he's already he's already used his redshirt year. So this year is kind of a wash for him with the ACL.
You call yourself a Christian, you're forgetting about Worship.
Evan Anderson is redshirting this year as a freshman. And then next year we have... At running back, we have DeJuan Hewitt and King Doru. Those are great names. I love those names.
I think I would anticipate next year running back would looking at Worship Fuller and Doru probably is the three guys that would compete for the most time. I think Doru is better than his ranking from what I've heard and could garner some potential time there. I haven't seen a whole lot from any of the other guys, really.
I think Horvath could do pretty well, too. He's done all right this year, and I like that he's getting a lot of run right now as a walk-on, and he's not been bad, honestly.
Well, I think he'd stay in that same kind of role, though, as the fullback, H-back, run some stuff for him, but I don't think he's going to be getting any of the kind of the regular carries, I wouldn't expect. Not with the talent, I think, of the other three that I've listed.
It is fun to have a giant number 40 in the backfield, though, getting the ball again. That just takes me back so well.
You don't win games by pandering to the old people, though, Travis. It's not how that works.
And I am one of the old people now, I guess. So
ain't nothing wrong with a good fullback.
That's right. But yeah, in terms of what we're missing, you know, I would probably say maybe another defensive tackle because we've got three ends and one tackle too. That would be, just having another tackle would be nice. But you know, it's a pretty stacked recruiting class, and we've got guys that are coming in that are going to be instant impact players, like a Karlaftis, like Fischel, Wright, Marvin Grant is probably going to be, you know, he'll slide right in and start at safety. It's going to be just a really impactful class, and I think that's another reason that I think it's critical to keep Brom, because we've got to get this class signed. It's the best class that we've had in a very, very long time. And it's one of those classes that can raise the entire program up to a next level. We may not see an instant raise with them all being freshmen next season, but you're looking at an impact 2-3 years down the line when they're all still here and coming into their primes that you could have a really, really good program built on their success.
Yeah, one point about I think the only guy that we have left that we're going to be continuing to be actively recruiting is Bell, because I think at this point the scholarship chart pretty full. And so I don't think the coaching staff sees any holes that are an immediate need. Now, if, you know, we lose some guys to transfers or, you know, the offseason shakes out, might add some guys to that list, some transfers, maybe some JUCOs that pop up late. But I think defensive line, I think Karlaftis, you can slide him inside if need be. I think next year's class is going to be another big class for defensive line because we need that depth. I think that's been our biggest weakness, is that we just can't play Lorenzo Neal every single snap or he's going to die.
Yeah, we have zero pass rush right now from our defensive line, and I think it's pretty telling that we have a safety that has as many snaps as every defensive lineman combined on the roster. And that's they're decent against the run, but they get no pressure up front, and we're having to do anything possible with blitzes and whatnot to break up a passing game. And that's where a guy like Karlaftis is going to be such a force on the outside, and he's going to be such a difference maker from day one.
See, I'm just thinking, like, assuming we can not only get Brom to stay after this offseason, but get him to stay two more years. This recruiting class we have coming in next year, like, again, like, they'll make an impact next year, like you said, but really it's going to be their sophomore year. And I'm looking at the 2020 schedule, and assuming Brom stays and that recruiting class is still good, like, could have a really good year in 2020, I think.
Absolutely.
Because the toughest games I'm looking at are probably going to be at Nebraska to open up the season, assuming, you know, it seems like Frost is starting to turn a little bit, the tide there, and then at Michigan are definitely going to be the hardest games. But other than that, we get Wisconsin and Iowa at home.
I will say Boston College could be tricky.
It's true, but it definitely could be a really great season that year.
To Frost's credit, I think Nebraska's out-recruiting us this year already, and it's just his first full recruiting class.
Yeah, and I mean, we're seeing, I mean, granted, they've beaten the Minnesota, unlike us, and Illinois. So, I mean, like, you know, Frost just needs, like, that really bad start. Like, he took UCF from an 0-12 team to 13-0. So, you know, he just needed that, like, 0-6 start to get started.
Yeah, they have less commits, but they're higher rated. They have 6 4 stars, according to 24/7, already signed. And none of them, well, one's from Arizona, but other than that, it's all Midwest and kind of the Rocky Mountain areas. So really right in their recruiting footprint.
Yeah, they're getting it done, but it's just nice to see Purdue in the top 25 recruiting wise. I mean, it's nice to have some actual talent coming in, as opposed to trying to talk ourselves into, you know, these 7 2-star guys might be diamonds in the rough that everyone overlooked.
If you recruit enough 2-star guys, one of them's bound to be good.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we got our share. We have a few guys on the team right now that were 2-star guys that are showing out, or, you know, didn't get highly recruited, that have worked out for us. But how much of that is scheme, and how much of that is them actually being underrated? And better to go with the 4-star guys, because more of them are going to be hits, I think, than 32 stars per year.
This is true.
Yeah, unless you're Danny Hope, and then all 4-star recruits flame out.
I do have a good Ken Plu story. So,
Ken Plu can be bad for us. Ken Plu nearly wrecked us.
But on that note, maybe we should talk about next week's game.
Absolutely. Let's move forward. We have Wisconsin coming in, and Purdue and Wisconsin, the history has not gone well of late. They actually have the longest win streak of any opponent ever over us. Yeah. They have won the last 12 games in a row, excuse me.
Well, it's not only that, but the last time we beat Wisconsin was 2003. And mm-hmm. not counting Rutgers and Maryland, Purdue has beaten every single Big Ten team at least once since the last time we beat Wisconsin.
We have not beaten Wisconsin and West Lafayette in 19 years. Or no, in 21 years. The last time we beat them in West Lafayette was 1997.
It's true. But at the same time, I have some hope, because the last time Purdue beat 3 ranked teams in one season was 2003, right?
Uh-huh.
And the last time Wisconsin lost a home non-conference game was 2003. And this year they lost to BYU at home. And so since 2003 was the last time Purdue beat Wisconsin, maybe we just keep repeating 2003.
Maybe. The thing is Wisconsin's not been good this year. I know they started the season highly rated. Their offense has just been ridiculous. For a team that was number 4, they cannot pass the ball. Now, granted, I know that we have struggled this season when we've had a glaring weakness facing us. Like, oh, Minnesota can't stop the run. Well, we didn't run on him. Oh, Michigan State can't stop the pass. Well, they stopped the pass, and they had a backup quarterback go nuts on us. But Hornibrook has just been awful. And they are 115th nationally against the pass. Now, they're sixth in the run at 266 yards a game, but especially these last few weeks, they have just stagnated offensively, and I think that plays into our hands. Plus, we have been playing much, much better at home, and it would be nice to ride that home momentum and get this done. And, of course, Hornibrook's been hurt, too. They've been on their backup quarterback the last few games as well.
Right, and I think a big thing is we're going to have to force Taylor to make a few errors as well, because I think he's been having a bit of the fumble rooskies lately. Like, he has had some trouble with ball security, and that's cost Wisconsin a few key drives for them as well. So we'll just have to see. I mean, this could easily be a low scoring affair as well.
Well, I'm looking at their backup quarterback, Jack Cohn. The last two games combined, he is 14 of 27 for 124 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. And that's two games. Plus, that's the benefit of facing Rutgers, for crying out loud.
Well, we have a worse pass defense than Rutgers. So I can guarantee you that Cohn or Hornibrook are going to throw for like 300 or so yards, because our pass defense is the third worst in FBS.
Yeah, there's that pass rush again. And Taylor's rushed for 393 yards and four touchdowns in the last two games. So I think we know he's going to be getting the football.
Just probably.
I think to avoid this being a Minnesota situation, we are going to have to score probably twice in the first quarter, at least twice in the first half, because the defense is not going to be able to take run after run after run after run. We just don't have the depth. And that's what we ran into, I think, in Minnesota more than anything, was that the defense was not ready to deal with being on the field as long as they were.
And I think I've just got this running theory with Blau. He has got to get a scoring drive within the first two drives of the game, or he just does not get anything going. He needs to get in that momentum early and often, because at Michigan State and then at Minnesota, he didn't get any kind of rhythm going early, and that cost him the rest of the game. But then you look at Illinois, you look at Ohio State, you look at Boston College. What happened? He was able to get that early drive going, and that kind of set the tone for everything.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is just he's got to get the ball out faster, you know, because in both Michigan State and Minnesota, like, they put pressure on him and made him feel uncomfortable. And again, he was hesitant, double thinking things, and he ended up having to either throw the ball away or get sacked. And Wisconsin, even though they're not as good, like, their defensive line is probably better than Michigan State's and Minnesota's, and they're going to give our weakened offensive line some trouble.
Well, I think Minnesota had better pass rush when it came to the defensive line than you really would have thought. I think they had a player who was one of the better pass rushers in the league so far this year. Can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah. Willekes. They had the top. Willekes was for Michigan State, but I know what you're talking about. It was the linebacker that leads the Big Ten in sacks. I think it was Coughlin was his name, something like that.
Yeah.
We really do our research here before these. Well, I am encouraged that Wisconsin's run defense is 67th in the nation at 161 yards a game. So it's not the usual stout run defense that we've normally faced. But again, it's better than what we just saw in Minnesota. And look what Minnesota did. So I think it's critical that we can't go away from the run like we did against Minnesota. We got to find room there, and we've got to get it going.
And I think it'll be a big help having this week of practice. The weather is going to be the same all week as it is going to be on game day. Again, you can't simulate freezing conditions when it's not freezing outside.
But it was cold for Minnesota too.
Right.
I mean, it's not like it was warm on their sideline or anything. That's why I don't buy this whole weather excuse. It was cold for them too. They can deal with it, and so can we.
It was something they were able to practice in that weather. I think it was about 50s in Indiana all week. Minnesota had a few lower temperatures. I'm not saying it's the only reason, but it looked like our guys were not prepared for cold weather.
Oh yeah, our guys looked super cold on Saturday too. Like you said, they weren't prepared, or they didn't know how to play in it.
I'll say I also have a Minnesota cold weather game story too. So,
oh really? Now,
when the rugby team lost 8-9 in the playoffs at Minnesota in -7 degree weather,
that's chilly. That is very chilly. But it would just be nice to get the bowl eligibility out of the way. I don't want to go to Bloomington with it up in the air still. I mean, yes, we should beat Indiana, but it would be very demoralizing to get to 5-4 and then see this all fall apart here at the very end of the season by dropping 3 in a row and missing a bowl game when a bowl game would be so meaningful after the 0-3 start.
Be like the complete opposite of last season.
Yeah, it would be.
I'm gonna tell you a secret. I really want us to get the bowl game eligibility out of the way this week. I was really hoping it was gonna be Minnesota because IU has better overall depth of talent than we do.
But I think we have better coaching. I think we utilize what we have better.
I think we have better coaching, and I think we have better high points. I think quarterback play, Blau is better. And, of course, they can't match the explosiveness of Rondale Moore. But overall, they have lost more games by bad coaching and basically unfortunate mistakes and unfortunate circumstances than people really give them credit for.
And I'm with you. But that's been Indiana's MO for a long time under a number of other coaches, too.
Honestly, we brought up the Wisconsin record. Of course, you guys know I grew up an IU fan. I looked back. The last time IU beat Wisconsin was 2002. I barely remember any of my teams ever beating Wisconsin.
It's just been, and I think what has made it stand out is most of these games haven't even been close. We haven't scored more than 20 points against them in these 12 straight losses. We lost 49-20 in 2016 to them, and we lost 31-20 in 2005. That's it. That is our high water mark for points scored during this whole losing streak. And the time that I went to Camp Randall was 2009. We lost 37-0. And the only reason I stayed was long enough to experience jump around. And then I was like, all right, let's flee this place like it's on fire because it was that bad.
Well, I remember a few years back, this was 2010. So I was watching it for the sheer, just watch IU pain. But it was the 83-20 game
Wisconsin yes.
kept putting in backups and they just all kept breaking off 40-yard runs every single time they touched the ball. So it was just, they weren't trying to run up the score. There just wasn't anything for them to do but just keep running over the IU defense. I think that was the Monty Ball era.
Yeah, it sounds like the Monty Ball era when they had like their third string back later would have like
they're all NFL backs, yeah.
games. Yeah, that was just ridiculous.
Well, on that note, let's hope we can start a new history on Saturday.
That would be nice, and it would also be nice to send off the seniors with a nice home win. Just to go into the off season, win your last four games at home, and especially win on senior day. You always want to win on senior day, even if it is against Wisconsin. And it'd be quite the memory for them to go out by beating the team that we haven't beaten in 12 years.
And I think beating Wisconsin would also bury the hatchet when it comes to the fumble as well,
because that was
Wisconsin. And that's when the losing streak started.
Yeah, that's true. Because that was the first game in the losing streak. Boy. We're just having fun, aren't we?
Yeah, so let's just sign off. Right here.
Basketball has always done very well against Wisconsin, though.
Except last year when it cost us a damn Big Ten.
Well, okay. Well, maybe we can bury the hatchet in Ethan Happ's leg.
Nah, Ethan Happ is the most overrated player in the Big Ten. He has one move.
Nick Ford is also very overrated, though.
But this is not the basketball podcast. Let's wrap this up.
Okay. So any final thoughts, Holmes, before we go here or no?
Louisville's fan base does not deserve happiness.
Now, this is true because Louisville is the only place where I've nearly gotten arrested at a college football game.
I was so drunk once on, is it 3rd Street in Louisville?
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be arrested when there was no threat of that actually happening.
I've never been to Louisville, and I plan on keeping it that way.
I have been to 2 Louisville football games, both against Miami, and it was the second one that I nearly got arrested, mostly because their fans thought that just because they beat Miami means that they were suddenly on the same level as them nationally with 5 national championships and all the history and everything. And it is amazing to see the arrogance that they have because they've won a couple Sugar Bowls out of the Big East.
So I guess that's what that's how IU fans view us in basketball.
We created the Big Ten.
You're damn right we created the Big Ten. They wouldn't have the Big Ten if it wasn't for us.
Anyway,
They weren't even at the original meeting, so.
No, it was all our guy with James H. Smart, who had one of the best mustaches ever. Have you ever seen the picture of his mustache? It's incredible.
Oh my God, this podcast is never going to end.
Oh.
Okay, do you have any final thoughts, Juan? We'll turn final thoughts to you.
Hold on.
No, you're done.
It's very important. It's very important. Trust me. If all goes according to plan, we're supposed to go to the Iowa game for my son's first Purdue game, but he had a fever in the morning, and that did not happen. So now we do have tickets for Wisconsin. So all goes according to plan. Will be Rory's first Purdue football game, and first football game in general, for that matter.
Well, my son's first football game was Hazel's famous 20-17 win over Indiana State. And I'm surprised I wasn't arrested for child abuse after that, because we've taken him to so many bad football games. And I love that David Blau asked him how long he's been going to games when we went to the fan day this year. And I told him, I was like, well, he's been coming since 2013. And David's like, oh, well, now you get to see some good football. So, all right, Juan, your final thoughts?
Oh, finally. Are you sure you don't have any other things to say, Holmes? You know, get it all out, you know, since you don't write anything.
We can speculate about coaching future.
Nope, we're done. I'm going to actually just sign off for you guys. For Travis and for Holmes, this is Juan Crespo from the West Coast signing off, and boiler up.